It's my privilege to introduce Jane Hubbard. She is a corporate and nonprofit executive coach and leadership facilitator. She has been a CEO in the past, and yet now feels she has found her niche in this particular role. And she is an active business partner with key leaders and executives and operating teams of international and domestic industries, and has a great joy in her life of her children and her five grandchildren, along with traveling and learning. And one thing about good leaders, they're always good learners, constantly learning, constantly seeking new insight about how we can maximize the roles of leadership we're in. But we're glad to have Jane here with us today and thankful for her being a part of this as she focuses on unbridled optimism from what you see on the screen there and maximizing our potential in leadership there. So, Jane, if you'll come on up, let's welcome her. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Brian. It's a real joy to be here. When Trey asked me if I would talk about women in leadership at Johnson Ferry, I said, oh, well, you want me to talk about my faith in my leadership, right? And on the third time around, I got it that I was supposed to talk about women in leadership. Usually I'm talking about how faith and leadership go together, but then I realized since I am a woman and I've been in leadership positions, I guess it's okay, right? So I'm really glad to be here today with all of you. This quote has really impacted me lately. And first, it's kind of a downer to think that we're only at 50% of human capacity. But the good side of that is that means we have a long way to go. So I'm curious, though, as we get started, because this is going to be a conversation. This is not talking head time, so you can't zone out for the next 45 minutes. This is going to be interactive. Adults learn best from each other and from conversation, and so that's what we're going to do. I'm curious if any of you over lunch talked about this quote and what it might mean in your own workplace. Anybody? All right. Well, the good news is you're going to have more opportunities to talk to each other. So let me just back up here for a minute. In fact, May. We're going to do this in three parts. So the first part of this talk is going to be, it's all about the thinking. We're going to talk about how the brain works, how we perceive things, that kind of thing. Sort of a fun academic look of, guess what, we really are different as men and women. And then we're going to go into a section of data that's been collected by Turnet. Leadership group on women in leadership. And then I'm going to share some stories with you of experience and some qualitative research that's been done. And then the last part is, you know, we've got the data says, the experience says, and then what do we say? I'm going to challenge you around your table to talk about, as a result of what you've heard today, what are you going to do differently walking out of this room? And maybe Chad, your next speaker, in a couple of months might ask you what you did differently from today. Because otherwise, I fear this is 2 hours and there's about 40 of us. That's 800 hours. We don't want to waste 800 hours, do we? So we want to walk out of here with something. So let's get started. We've already done that. All right, it's all in the thinking. There really is difference in a male and a female brain. There are gender differences, and I'm sure many of you know some of this, but this is kind of interesting things. This is a study that was done that was written up in Psychology Today, and they studied the four primary areas of the brain, processing, chemistry, structure, and activity, and found documented 100 differences. So, you know, the old Venus and Mars story. I mean, we really are Venus and Mars. I'm talking to you thinking I'm saying one thing, and you're hearing something else, right? Because our filters are different. Rosetta Stone has an organization called Fit Brains. I thought all she did was language, but she's got this company, and she did research of 1,000 brains in December 2013. It was published. and found that there really are actually different neurological connections. For men, the brain connects from the back to the front, and for women, it connects to the right to the left more rapidly. And that's because women have, and I've been practicing saying this word, so let's see if I can get it out of my mouth correctly. Women have larger corpus callosums, C-O-L-L-O-S-U-M. Ladies, did you know you had a larger corpus? Yeah, no, me either. But that's the pathway that goes from right to left. So it physically is easier for us to go back and forth. Not a bad thing, just different. So males, we all know this, tend to perform much better at left-sided tasks, so very, you know, math, analytics, that kind of thing, whereas women are more on the bigger picture, multitasking side. Proven. So it might look like this, our thinking, and this might remind you sometimes of a conversation you might have had with your spouse or somebody at work where you may think you're talking about one thing and they're thinking about something entirely different. Now the research is showing, though, that it's not as simple as this, obviously. We don't all think as linearly as this, that it's very complex. And, of course, some of us can be female and be left-brained and male and right-brained, so there's no just quick answers. But this manifests itself in interesting ways, sometimes in a workplace. So Trey asked me to tell some stories about being a woman in leadership. So here's one. I'm retired from Delta Airlines, and I say I was there in the glory days, and then I was there in the bad times. I was there for the bankruptcy, for 9/11, really bad times, but also had some glory days. So as we were heading into bankruptcy, I became the director of organizational effectiveness. And it was in a big sign when you got off the elevator. And every morning I would get off that elevator and I would look at that sign and I would think, Lord, this has got to be a joke because we have never been more ineffective or dysfunctional in our whole career. We were heading toward bankruptcy and things were just really bad. I also was responsible for change management. Now, I don't know about in your organizations, but at Delta, change management became a code word with a C-level for, oh my God, here she comes, she's going to tell us what to do and we're not going to like it. And that's the way it was, right? Because we were having to change, and we kept trying to change, and we just couldn't, as hard as we tried. But guess when we did change? When we hit the bottom of the barrel, and we went into bankruptcy. Then we were more willing to change. But up until that time, we'd plan all these elaborate programs and lay them all out, and they would minimally be successful. And one day I was walking down the hall and ran into the executive vice president of marketing, and he said to me, I don't get it. We spend all this money and all this training and we go out there and we tell the front line what to do and they don't do it. I don't get it. Well, I had this picture of a waterfall in this book that I had, and it was fortuitous. I said, well, look at this, Lee. You see this? You're down all the way at the bottom of this waterfall because you've been living with this day and night. But the front line, they're at the top of the waterfall. They don't know what it's like to go down. They're scared to death. And you've got to help them go from the top to the bottom. Now, there's a good example, I believe, in how we see things differently, because that's a more, you know, a broader picture instead of just do it. I was asked to lead, and if you've been on an airplane and you've been in Atlanta in the last 20 years, you're going to laugh at this, but I was responsible for mishandled bags in the Atlanta airport, which meant career-wise, either they were getting ready to get rid of you or they were testing you to see what you could do, because that was the project from you know where. Because Atlanta was just so horrible, and now they've got those readers, and life's great, and every time that bag comes off of that thing in the front of the airport, I'm just like, thank you, Lord. Look at that. There's my bag, and I just got off the airplane. This is so wonderful. But at that time, we didn't have all the electronics. We could not get bags from one airplane to the other in less than 30 minutes. So we decided to take a new approach. How do we look at this more systematically, more holistically? And we did something really strange. We took lean processing. We got our frontline baggage handlers into the airport, and we gave them Legos. And we said, show us what happens. This is a bag. Here's your tug. Here you are. Build it in Legos. Those guys had a ball. They thought that was great. And they did. They built how they did it. And they showed us how they do victory laps around the tarmac, which means that they had no measurements. And when they got tired of doing bags, they would just get on their tug and go for joyrides around the tarmac, which we were all like astounded, right, that that could even happen. And so we realized that we needed some measurements. We needed some accountability. We married the lean processing, getting the front line involved. They helped us with the measurements, and then they helped us with the training. And we would take one concept, and we would train to it every day, and we would measure it, and we built teams around it. And at the end of the day, we fixed the problem. $3 million worth of mishandled bags were fixed. All because we were able to look at things more holistically and more globally. Now, I'm not saying that that's because I was a woman, but I think that all of that goes to show you it takes all of us together. It's not just a genetic brain thing. So I've met several financial types, so you may know this. Richard Thaler is a behavioral economics specialist, and he just won the Nobel Prize in economics because of his research on systematically irrational. And what he's saying is that in the Western population, 1% of our population sees the big picture. So we typically, as Westerners, are not looking at the big picture. We are looking at the here and the now. While 99% are myopic or narrowly focused. He calls the 1% the econs and the 99% the humans. Now, for those of you who are financial planners, I bet you could tell lots of stories of how we like to look at the here and now. But that influence of the Western culture that drives us more and more to be in the here and now today is having great influence on how we think. 90% of the Western population are right-handed. And if you're right-handed, you're controlled by the left hemisphere of your brain. That means that of the 10%, 70% of left-handed people are forced to operate out of their left hemisphere. Meaning that you take that part that's left, there's about 1% of the population who can actually operate out of both sides of the brain. So there's just lots and lots of, we could go on and on, but I'm not going to. So I'm going to get you now into, we also see things differently. Not only do we operate out of different parts of our brain, are we influenced by our culture? Western culture is the here and now. If we were in Asia, we would be in an honor-shame culture, and we'd be focused more on what's good for the community rather than good for the individual. So we have all these dynamics going on. But I want to bring it home to you now here at your table. This is where you can have a good time talking to each other. All right. We see things differently. So what do you see here? Tell each other around the table what you see here. I hear a face. What else? Okay, so it's each table. Do you see both of them? Okay. How about this one? What do you see? You see a baby? Somebody see something other than a baby? Like, yeah. A lake and a tree with a couple standing there. Yeah. All right, what does this say? In the springtime. But if you, yeah. Others of you see I love Paris in the springtime? Right. All right, what do you see here? A frog. What do you see here? It's all a matter of perspective. See that? It's the same picture. Everybody see that? So, who can read this? Can you read it? Is there at least one person at each table that can read it? All right, good. All right, so our perception makes a really big difference. We can see two or more different ways, the same picture. We could be looking at the same thing, thinking we're talking about the same thing, and it could be two different things. Sometimes we don't see what is there, if you didn't see the double V's. Sometimes our perspective makes us miss things, right? Same drawing, just turned sideways, makes it look entirely different. And then the mind makes assumptions which may not be real. So take all of this together. It's no wonder sometimes that we don't think that we talk right to each other, right? Or that you're not saying the right thing or you're not getting me. So now I want to talk, this is just a little trick to help you before you react to something, because we have immediate reactions to things. So this is just a little helpful thing for you to take away from here, to calibrate how you see something before you respond. So the first thing is to describe it. The next is to interpret it and then respond to it. So describe is that that's what we see. You can defend your statement in court. It's 100% true, factual. Interpret is what we think about what we see. So we interpret based on what we believe is the purpose of the whole situation, not just a piece of it. And then we actually respond to the interpretation more than we do to the description. And so it often will bring an emotion, trigger an emotion in you, both positive and negative. So if you have trouble seeing this picture, face down on all of your tables is this picture. So pick it up. And I want you to talk just for a couple of minutes, because it's your first thoughts, about at your table, what do you think this picture is about? What's going on in this picture at your table? Okay, now have the same conversation, but start with just describing factually what do you see, and then what's your interpretation of what you're seeing, and then what your response is, a negative and a positive. Just take a minute and think about that and share around your table so we can hear. Anybody want to volunteer to, here you go, up here at the front table. There you go. All right. She's bringing her culture to his world and not understanding his world. Okay. Someone else? Makeup artist in a play. That's a good one. One more. Yep. Yes, sir. So you hear in all of those interpretations, we bring our experience, right, and to it and into the description. She really is an Amway lady in the Amazon, and these are local tribesmen. So Amway, she's selling Amway. I mean, she's probably not selling it. Well, you were close. Yeah. Yeah, and she does, I mean, look at her. She got her sunglasses, you know. She's definitely out of her element. So, but it's fun to think about, what are you describing? So there's really four guys in there. There's a little guy behind her that's hard to see. And yeah, and then the emotional comes with the interpretation. So all this to just quickly remind us that we are different, we do have perceptions, and we do have interpretations. So next we're going to move to the data. This is where I met Trey at the CEO NetWeavers breakfast, and this was a panel, Why Women Make Great Executives. And so Lynn Turknet is one of the co-founders of the leadership group there and had a panel of five very successful women. So one of them is a friend of mine, and she gave me these slides because Trey really liked them, and they are very powerful. So women's pyramid of progress in the corporate world. Women are 46% of the workforce. We are a greater percentage in management and leadership positions, 20% on Fortune 500 board seats, 14% corporate officers, 8% top owners, and 4.2% Fortune 500 CEOs. So you see that the pyramid narrows, obviously, as you go up. We're still, this is recently, June of this year, Business Week article about women are still underpaid. We're making a lot of progress, but there's still a pay inequity of women in same positions. Now, anybody here work at Delta Airlines? Okay, this won't keep you from flying airplanes, so I'm going to tell you. I came to Delta in the 80s, and it was all men running the company. Well, little by little, they figured out, I think, that they needed to have women. And so there's two predominantly female departments at Delta. Guess what they are? Flight attendants in flight and the call centers. And so that is where, and you notice that my career, I started out in IT, then I went to in-flight, I went to the call centers, and then I went to training at the end of my company. Career, I was over training. But what we did was we got routed into the majority female departments, which isn't a bad thing because it really did help the predominantly female workforce to have female leaders. But it took a long time for a female to go over to the jet base among the mechanics and the engineers and not get catcalled at, you know, because that was a man's world. Now, it's, you know, we finally had a female chief financial officer for 9/11 who won an award for the work that she did through the financing of the 9/11 incident. And that glass ceiling got broken, but not all the way to the top. Women are a force to be reckoned with. So we're 50% of the workforce, 2/3 of the college graduates, and 60% of the master's degrees. 80% of purchases in the U.S., $12 trillion spending worldwide. Men who buy your clothes. You buy your own clothes? Come on, speak up here. Do you? Well, look at you all. You're a self-actualized group of men here. Predominantly, I think it's like 60 or 70% of men's clothes are bought by women for their spouses. $10.5 million worth of women, or 10.5 million women own businesses, 35% of all startups, and overall women's leadership skills are rated higher than their male colleagues on 360s. All that sounds good, but let's look at it from a financial, because this is the bottom line, right? 27% higher return on equity and a 42% higher ratio of dividend payouts for those with greater gender diversity on their leadership team. This is comparing companies whose women hold less than 5% of the top operational jobs to those where women hold more than 10%. So not really a wide gap. It was 400 studies, companies in this study, and Nordea, who also did a similar research, is Scandinavia's largest bank. But they found that there was 25% better financial performance when companies have more women in executive and board positions. So the diversity is important in expanding the human capacity. This is a bit of an eye chart, so I apologize. I tried to, but this is a 360 that was done by TurkNet, showing the significant gender differences. At the top, it shows emotional mastery. The blue are men and the red are women. The emotional mastery, you can see that women are low on that. And we could make lots of jokes about that, but we're not going to. And but women are more dependable, a high drive for achievement. External focus is less. Integrity, high. Humility, high. Acknowledging performance, emphasizing excellence, information sharing, and then self-confidence and business acumen is less. I think this is a really revealing chart because it says to me, yes, there are differences. It doesn't say, look, hear me roar, I'm wonderful. It says, as a leader, as a CEO of your company or a leader of your team, this would be important for you to know and know how to encourage improvements in all of these areas and play off of the strengths of the men and the women. So let's just take just a minute because I know we're our time is getting away. But let's take a minute and just talk at your table. Does this resonate with you? And if you are the leader of a team or a group, or even in your own, you're an individual contributor, how might you think differently as a result of having this as a 360 result on your team? Just take a couple of minutes at your table. Do you relate to this at all? Yeah, it is an eye chart. I'm happy to share these if you want to.
I just wanted to show it to my wife and daughters.
Good.
You're going to leave a minute for questions?
Okay. I'm happy to share this PowerPoint if you give me your card afterwards. Okay, let's take one more minute and wrap it up. Okay, I'm going to move us along because we're running short on time. So this next part is, what does experience say? I'm going to hit these really quickly. Vicky Ascara, who was a chief marketing officer for Delta, has gone on to be the CEO of Feeding America and totally transformed the organization, then became CEO of Opportunity International and transformed that organization. It's just an amazing woman. And she was part of George Bush's Institute Global Women's Leadership. And so I emailed her on Facebook and said, give me some words for women about leadership, because she's just been so successful in making such a huge difference in the world. And here's what she has to say. Ladies and men, you can listen to this too. I think it works for you too. Get up every day with a sense of gratitude. Who knows why we were born here in the United States versus the Congo, but being grateful, setting your minds right, and knowing that you're blessed. Be resilient. Life throws many curveballs, personally and professionally. Resiliency allows you to keep bouncing back, tougher and more aware with each blow. Show up and work hard. Showing up means being where you say you'll be every time. It builds trust, confidence, and teamwork. And every great leader knows it's all about the team. Good luck. Vicki was a flight attendant. That's the way she began her career. And Bob Coggan, who was chief marketing officer when she was probably a supervisor at Delta, realized, I talked to him the other day too, he's 81 years old, and I said, several women have told me that you mentored them and helped them be really successful at the C-level. Tell me about it. And he said, I would see things in women that I didn't see otherwise. I would see this desire to make things right, to care about people, great compassion. And he said, what I would do then was to give them a project, to let them show what they could do. And then I would be by their side to make sure that when they failed, because everybody does, we pick you back up and you learn and you move forward. I think that's just such a great testimony to what it is to helping people find their capacity. He made the difference for many women, including another one is Paulette Corbin, who created Delta Express. If you've been around for a while, you know that airline. And it was all because Bob said, you've got something that I think we need, and brought them into it. So look at this. This is a bit of an eye chart. That's why I said I'll give you these PowerPoints if you want. But this is interesting research to me. Men and women pretty much start performance-wise at, you know, in their 20s, kind of at the same place. And males are initially slightly more effective. But when you cross the 40 age point, women's effectiveness increases. And there's about a 9% gap after 40 between men and women in their effectiveness. So they did research to try to get underneath that to figure out why. And their belief from doing the research is that women do more self-development after they're 40. So that lighter line is the female line and the darker one is the male line. That women, over and over again in the research, would say, I have to work twice as hard to get half the recognition. And because of that, they're driven to, you know, find ways to do self-development, ask for feedback, take the feedback, and run with it. Now, I have to say that being on a whole female team has different challenges. So I'm all a proponent of males and females, because I've been on an all-female team in in-flight, and some nights I would go home exhausted, because women, I love us, but we talk in circles a lot. And to decode that takes a lot. Whereas with men, you say it, you know. So I always knew where I was when I was dealing with men, and with women, I was always trying to figure it out. So that feedback and keep that loop going is really important. I am going to just fast path through this. And like I said, you all can have these. I did, at the end of my career, 2 years before I retired, I had my dream job. It was combining technology and education, and I became the corporate director for learning for the company. Working for the man that was the most godly leader we had, I adored this man. And I was like, thank you, Lord. It must be all my great work. I'm sure that that's why I've gotten this gift of the perfect job, you know, blah, blah, blah. In 6 months, my dream boss got promoted, and a woman that I had worked with for years, and we had been competitors from the beginning, became my boss. And he called us in to tell us, and, you know, sometimes you just open your mouth and you're thinking in your head, don't let it come out your head. Don't let it come out your mouth. And it just does, right? Out my mouth came, oh, my gosh, Beth, never in my wildest dreams did I ever think you'd be my boss. And there was this total silence in the room, as you can only imagine. And she finally laughed and said, well, Jane, I'm sure you just echoed what everybody in this room is thinking. But it was a sort of downhill turn after that. My perfect job and my perfect boss weren't perfect anymore. And, oh, by the way, we were heading into bankruptcy, and so they made the decision to take $50 million out of HR. And guess where training lives? And guess who was the number one training company in the United States that year for Training Magazine? We were. So we were the plum for the outsourcing. And I ended up on a team to outsource my training department and went in and said, I'm through. That was the way I left. But I left with a package, and I left like I was treated well. But we never know. The gift in this, and then I'm going to stop, is that while we were doing this, my team was so disenfranchised because people who work for Delta want to work for Delta. They don't want to work for Georgia Power or someplace else. We love our airline. So to tell these people that they were going to get to do the same job, but just for ABC outsourcing company, was like cutting their wrist off. I finally realized that they had no trust. So every Wednesday morning, I would call them together at 8 o'clock in a room like this, and I would say, you can ask anything you want to. And you have a choice. I'll either give you the party line because I don't know the definite answer, or I'll give you what I know right now. The only thing is, you cannot come back to me the next week and say, but you said, because it was changing so quickly. And I said, you can choose. They couldn't answer me. And they said, can we have time to think about it? They came back the next week and they said, no, we want the truth. So it was like, this is where I felt like the Lord just came into my workplace, because that became my pulpit on Wednesday mornings, and we would have these really tough conversations. We ended up outsourcing everybody but 17 people, and everybody left with dignity and respect. Not always happy, but with dignity and respect. So my bottom line message is, let's look at each other in the way that God has created us and know that we all have 100% capacity. And what a rich opportunity we have to honor and recognize the differences in each other. But the same is our love for each other.